Rashawn, how are you?
Good. How are we doing, boys?
Outstanding. The Edmonton Oilers, what do you make of Korpikoski on the second line to start?
Well, I mean, if you listen to what Todd said when he originally made the change, he said he felt like that line was giving up far too much in the other end and that it needed a bit of a change-up. So they go from an offensive-minded player to a mainly defensive-minded player. And, I mean, I don't have too much of an issue with it. Like, I think there's enough offense out there between Connor and Jordan that it's okay to have somebody who's more of a simple game, making sure he's taking care of things in the defensive zone. Like, tactically, I don't mind it. And if that's what they're trying to do, is just put together the best lines to win games, I don't mind that he's gone down that path. I just don't think that Letestu, to Cassie, and Yakupov line is going to be able to get much done. But if it allows the McDavid line to be a little safer and allow those guys to cheat a little bit more offensively, maybe because a guy like Korpikoski is there, then I'm okay with it.
I think a lot of it also has to do with just in the offensive zone. I just don't like Eberle and Yakupov, albeit, you know, very different results, are kind of similar guys. They're both perimeter players. You know, they're not guys who dominate on cycles or anything like that. I think adding in a Korpikoski or a Cassian or a Maroon just gives you a different look in the offensive zone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like Korpikoski can, he's a decent skater, so he can actually close on the forecheck fairly fast. And, you know, he does an okay job. He's not super physical, but he can be when he wants to be. And so I think he's a good guy, first in on the puck, jarring pucks loose, trying to just create a little bit of havoc and do some of the dirty work down in the corners for those guys. I don't think it's going to be it wouldn't surprise me if by, you know, the midway point of the first or second period that there was an adjustment and that it wasn't something that necessarily they stood pat with. But I think it's a safe option that, you know, other players who have been given those opportunities, and we've seen, whether it's Zach Cassian or Neil Yakupov, we've seen other players who would be considered for that spot that maybe haven't, you know, produced or performed the way they want them to. It keeps them thinking. And it's not just because Ryan Nugent-Hopkins isn't in the lineup and Teddy Purcell's not around anymore doesn't mean those guys should be comfortable that they're just going to sit in top six roles. So I think it keeps other people in the lineup thinking and motivated and gives Korpikoski an opportunity. And he's got a little bit of finish. We saw it just last game.
The defense for the Edmonton Oilers. You look ahead to next season, Ryan. I think it's very plausible. You could have Reinhardt and Nurse start the season in the minors, and that wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing. It just all depends on how much work they get done in the off season. Depends on whether they can add two legitimate bodies and guys that can play in the top couple of pairings. And if they can do that, then yeah, I'm not as certain with Darnell which way they'll go with it, because I think they're comfortable with Darnell at the NHL level as long as he's not being given too much. And to me, I think Darnell, you know, he could have survived. Well, he has survived, but it might have been better for him to be in the minors playing big minutes at that caliber. But at the same time, if he's going to be in the NHL, it would have been better for him to be taking a more, you know, a palatable workload for a 20-year-old, you know, playing 16, 17 minutes a night. And maybe that's a role he slides into next year. If they can put a couple guys ahead of him on the depth chart, then maybe he ends up in their third pairing, and that's better than playing him so high and playing him all those minutes. So we'll see which way it goes with Darnell, but I could definitely see that with Griffin.
Ryan Rashog from TSN. Oh yeah, I'd be very surprised, in all honesty, if Griffin Reinhardt starts the season in Edmonton next year, and I'm okay with that. I think it doesn't mean he's a failure as a player. He doesn't need to require waivers next season. You know what? And hopefully he comes to camp and is in better shape. He's stronger in his lower body, so he can move guys around and be more effective. And the other thing is, Ryan, the flat out fact for Griffin Reinhardt, when people watch him in these final games, he has to shed the "I'm a soft player" label, because other players in the league look at him that way. Regardless of what fans or any of the media think, that's how other players perceive him, and he's going to have to work hard at changing that.
Yeah, and that's difficult, though. That's not something that we see players do very often. That's not something where you see a guy go from, you know, a player who is a little bit softer and doesn't necessarily dominate the blue paint the way you might like a 6'4" defenseman to dominate the blue paint, to suddenly figure that out and come up with whatever you got to come up with to be that guy. Now, you know, Griffin's been a pretty high-end player for a long time. He was in junior, and he fought a little bit, but he didn't have to much. He was a heck of a good junior player. They needed him on the ice. He's no longer in a position where he is too valuable for that kind of stuff. I'm not just talking about fighting. I'm talking about when another team wants to skate to that blue paint and skate around in that real estate, he needs to have the confidence to make life a little more miserable for them, realizing that that might get him into some trouble now and then. That's tough, though. It's rare for guys to just suddenly find that. And maybe understanding that it could be the difference between a chance at an NHL career or being a fringe guy, maybe that'll push Griffin over the edge. But definitely, he needs to add that element to his game of fighting for his space, fighting for his goalie's space, not being afraid to hammer guys when he gets the chance, no matter who might be looking down at you with a snarly face. And it's tough at times for guys to develop that confidence, but I agree that it's what's part of what's lacking in Griffin's game.
And it's not, to me, being saw had nothing to do with fighting in today's age anymore.
No.
To me,
no, it doesn't happen.
It's when guys push him and then he just backs down, right? You got to stand your ground, because once players, and Matt, you can attest to this, once guys know a guy's going to give you an inch,
they absolutely take it. But I think, and I agree with you, Ryan, where you say it's certainly a lot easier to coach a little bit of that out of a player if he's crossing the line too often than it is to, you know, encourage him to do that. Now, it does happen, but it's hard to teach mean, as someone would say. It's some guys just seem to have it naturally and some don't, but he really does have to play with more of an edge just based on his size. And he doesn't have to fight. Doesn't have to take baseball swings at guys, but like you said, Jason, like when someone comes at him and gives him a shot, he has to be unafraid to give them a shot back.
The thing is, though, and I know what you're saying about it doesn't necessarily need to be about fighting, because I think we all sort of have a sense of where that's going in the game. I mean, there's a certain segment of fighting that no longer happens in the game, but I'm telling you guys, there's a certain segment of fighting that still happens in the game. And the players who play the game are well aware of it. And so if you're Griffin Reinhart and you're 6'4" and you're trying to stay in the NHL and be as physical as you can, Kyle Clifford's going to get pissed off at you now and then. There are going to be players around the league, guys that you really don't want to have much to do with, who are going to be pissed off at you. And it takes courage to still go do those things that you know are going to get those guys pissed off at you. And when you're 6'4", you know, sometimes you just wind up in that situation. And that's difficult. So I agree, it's not about fighting, but it's about understanding. It may lead to that, to do the things you need to do and to show the intent to play, to show the intent to get out there and do it, despite the fact that you might get punched in the nose sometimes. And that's an incredibly difficult thing. But listen, Griffin, you know, he did it a little bit in junior, and he's a big, strong guy, and sometimes it just takes a little bit of confidence that way for it to happen a couple of times and you realize you're okay. He's a strong guy. He can protect himself, and he's going to be okay. But to stand in there, look guys in the eyes, not get shoved out of his space, because for a defenseman that size to be getting shoved out of his space is no good.
Nail Yakupov, Ryan, and probably would talk way too much over a guy that literally on most other teams based on what he's done, and I'm sure it's because of his draft status, but do you see Yakupov being in Edmonton next season?
Well, I think it kind of depends on what the offseason looks like. I think there's there's a few other dominoes that kind of need to fall around him a little bit to figure out where the need is. I mean, you know, you can't look at him as a number one overall pick anymore. Unfortunately, as difficult as that is for Oilers fans to maybe deal with, you got to stop looking at him as a number one overall pick and look at him as a complimentary offensive forward who's 22 years old and $2.5 million, and who has some holes in his game. But guess what? So does Teddy Purcell, and he was way more expensive. You know, Benoit Pouliot has some holes in his game as a complimentary offensive forward. He has some holes in his game, and he's more expensive. So throwing the baby out with the bathwater isn't necessary. If there's a fit for Nail based on other moves they make, if they don't replace Teddy Purcell in that top six role with anybody, if they decide they need to move Jordan Eberle, if they don't find an offensive forward, they might need Nail Yakupov. They might. And if the return for him continues to be what I presume is underwhelming, then at 22 years old for $2.5 million, I don't know that you just have to turn the page on him. I think you need to wait and see what else you get. Now, if they keep Jordan Eberle and they land another top six forward, whether it's Kyle Okposo or whoever, then I absolutely think that they're willing to turn the page on him.
When you say that maybe there's something more there, when you watch his game, what makes you believe that there's something more there? Because the elements of his game,
there's something more there.
No, but you said, yeah, you said you wouldn't trade him because there, you know, there could be something there. I guess to me, it's like, honestly, as I watch Nail Yakupov, I'm not sure what potentially is more there than what people see. I see a player that tries hard but doesn't accomplish very lot and has struggled understanding and reading the play at the NHL level.
Yeah. Well, listen, I heard you talking earlier on your show today about Patrick Maroon being a guy who can maybe chip in, 12 to 15 goals as a complimentary offensive forward with some size. And at, what's his number, $1.5 million?
Yeah, for the Oilers, yeah.
At $1.5 million, that being something that, hey, you're happy to take that, right? That even if he's 30-ish points, 10, 15 goals, and can play with other skilled players who do the most of the heavy lifting offensively, I think that's the way you need to start looking at Nail Yakupov a little bit, and less about him being the center of things and less about him being the center of attention or supposed to lead the charge, and more about, okay, if you play him with a certain type of player, what is he going to be able to give you? So remember, I mean, they've been playing with two offensive centers. There's a chance they're going to try and play with three here. How does Nail fit into a world where they're wanting to play three offensive lines? How does he look next to Nugent Hopkins for a little bit here when Ryan comes back? At $2.5 million, and with the offensive skills that he has, I don't think you need to throw the player away because he didn't pan out as a number one. So you got to see what else happens, see what other needs you have. Do you keep Eberle? Do you move Eberle for your defenseman? Is there another free agent to be had? Even if what Nail is basically what he is now, at $2.5 million next year, it's just not the end of the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying you give him away, per se. I would just...
But that's what they'd have to do, basically. I think that's evidenced by the fact that he hasn't been traded yet, is they would basically be selling for pennies on the dollar. And I think the fact that he's still an Oiler should tell you the return is not there, and that they're saying, well, okay, he's not a perfect player, but he's not a ridiculous number, and he's still 22 years old, and he does have one of the best one-timers on the team, and he did have a bit of success with McDavid before, so let's give Todd some more time to work with him rather than just ship him out of town for a second-round pick and a B-level prospect.
Yeah, we'll see. I'd be surprised if he's here next season.
I would be as well. And that's just, I think, just based situational. And I think there still is a lot of potential. And like you said, Ryan, he's a young guy. It's not like he's old. It's not like he's, 30 years old and still hasn't panned out.
If they trade one of Nugent Hopkins or Eberle in the offseason, you guys, do you not think that changes their thinking a little bit with what to do with Nail?
It probably just depends on the return they can get.
They're getting a defenseman for sure, right?
Well, I meant on Yakupov. On like, Nail. if you look at him, like what you're going to get, and
well, I think we've seen the return isn't there. The return hasn't been worth it so far, And that's my point. Is if he were worth something that the organization could get to really help itself and take a step, he'd be gone. But he's kind of not yet. That deal hasn't been there for either of the last couple of GMs.
Yeah, well, I think it's unrealistic to expect that you can get a deal that puts the Oilers on the next step, because Nail Yakupov's not likely going to do that for the team he goes to.
But even a helpful piece for right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see something like that in the offseason, like a third line player or a third pairing defenseman, maybe. I honestly could see something like that happening, because I'd be very surprised I think Nail Yakupov, he'll never come out and say it. I understand it, but I think a change of scenery would be a benefit to him, and I think it would be a benefit to the Oilers.
Yeah, for sure. And I think in an ideal world, that's exactly what happens. In an ideal world, the Oilers can hang on to Everly on the right side. They can find somebody in free agency. They got Cassian as a number three, and they're in good shape over there. But it's not necessarily an ideal world for them this offseason. They got some heavy lifting to do, and they're going to have to move some parts around on the board pretty significantly. And if Everly's one of those parts, now you're rethinking what it looks like. And they strike out in free agency or don't get something significant in free agency to help replace him because they had to move him for the D-man. Now you're rethinking everything a little bit. And I think that's the scenario in which I could see Nail still being here.
Shogar, should be an interesting one. The Sharks come in after getting dominated, yet winning the game against the Flames last night. Reimer in between the pipes, and Brent Burns on the back ends. Dangerous. Thornton's on fire in the calendar year. It'll be a tough test for the Oilers. Their forwards, I think, are going to have to help their defense by being in the offensive zone as much as they can tonight.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the way you got to play against that team. But, I mean, good luck with that. And that's the problem. That means you got to have defense who move the puck to the forwards and forwards who get it in and can keep it in and maintain. And that's not going to be easy. Like, look how those other California teams fared against the Oilers. And I know they didn't have home ice advantage, but still, that Anaheim game, that LA game, and I know San Jose isn't quite on the same level, but they're a smart veteran team with really good players that know how to put their thumb on a team with the kind of holes the Oilers have. So it'll be a tough task tonight.
Oh, very tough one. All right, Shogar, we'll see you at the rink.
Okay, guys.